podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the award-winning Anfield Rap on Radio City Talk. I don't do that sort of thing very often, but last week we won Best Radio Show at the Football Supporters Federation's Award. Really, really pleased to have won. Very, very kind. Everyone who voted for us and took the time, and just want to take the opportunity now at the start of this show to thank those who voted. Everyone who contributes to the Anfield Rap, there's over 100 people who give the time up here and there to talk about football. Not just football, but football primarily with us. And we're very, very pleased that they do so across our myriad of many, many different shows. There's all the people who obviously subscribe, and that helps pay for what we do. And if you haven't subscribed yet, have a think about it. TheAnfieldRap.com/subscribe for that. The tour player stuff's fabulous. And lastly, though, we'd very much like to thank the people actually at City Talk and also Radio City as a whole. Since we came in, they were absolutely lovely to us and have very much helped what we do, both made it better and also just simply been pleasant whenever we see them. So it's a big, big thank you to them, and it might all seem a little backslappy that we're doing it on the City Talk show, but I think it's important that you say thank you to people who've helped, and I'd include everybody at Radio City and Radio City Talk in that category. Everyone's marvellous. Everyone's very, very kind. Everyone's always got a polite word, so we'd like to thank them very much indeed. But this is the Anfield Wrap. Now we may as well get into the show proper with one huge eye on the West Ham game to come. We've got Andy Middleton talking at length about West Ham United so far this season and the fact that it isn't going very well. And I want to have a little chat about that with the gentleman in front of me, and those gentlemen are Mike Gerling, Josh Sexton and Dan Vincent, and they'll be with you for the next sort of hour or so until 7:30. And I've spoken for a long time there, Mike Gerling. So to
Yeah. 6 years.
To hand over to you. Might as well, but I feel like playing a record. To hand over to you now, and just start off with the, everyone wants to say you've got to put Bournemouth behind you, and you have got to put it behind you, but West Ham have got to put Arsenal behind them, and they've got to put Man United behind them. And I think that this is the, there's lots of talk of backlashes and all this sort of stuff, but you've now got a manager who's under massive pressure, and we've seen that in seasons gone by. What's he going to do? He's going to come to Anfield, he's going to think, I've just got to get out with the best possible result. The idea that West Ham are going to come and try and play or anything like that, I think is nonsense. They're just going to try and spend and do what Sunderland did, spend as much of the game as possible just keeping Liverpool at bay.
I agree. Bilic is having a torrid time, but he's not an idiot, is he? You know,
he's been around the game long enough.
He's been around long enough. He's gonna just do what everybody else has tried to do at Anfield in terms of stopping Liverpool playing. I mean, in his favour, you know, you could argue that he's playing us at the right time, but West Ham are in a they're in a bit of a free fall, aren't they, at the moment? So I think with Bilic, he's an unusual character, so I wouldn't like to second guess what he's going to do. You know, I wouldn't be amazed if he didn't try and do something which was very attacking rather than just do what Sunderland, what Moyes did, even though you'd think that's probably the game plan. But it really, it's Anfield and it's all about Liverpool again. And, you know, I think with Bournemouth and what happened there, we have to remember that we are imperious at home, and really it doesn't matter who, you know, what situation the opposition, we can't really think too much about that, you know, what situation they're in, other, you know, and start second guess now. And I'm sure Klopp isn't, and he's not that type of manager, and we're certainly not that type of team right now. Bournemouth wasn't so much a blip for me, which maybe we're going to talk about. I could kind of see it coming a little bit in the last few games.
You've been making those noises.
Yes, I'd noticed it as far back as I know the Leeds game was a League Cup game with a lot of changes, but the league game before that as well, where we drew away at Southampton, and then we struggled to unpick Sunderland. Whereas it was at the end, at the back of the international break, and you just thought we'd lost our sparkle a little bit. That intensity of play and that the quickness of play and the ingenuity just wasn't there. It was a bit more. It took a lot of effort in all those games for us. And so, you know, I didn't think the Bournemouth result was a freak in that we'd been winning 4-5-0 and then suddenly that popped up. But it was still something that we've got to get out of our system, and I'm sure we will.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like pretty much everything Mike's just said. Then, I mean, I think it all falls on us and what we want to do. I think that we'll turn up and we'll just concentrate on our game. Again, going to what Mike said and what other people have said on previous shows and stuff, I felt like it wasn't the one after Bournemouth. We hadn't been playing our usual standard of football the previous few games to that. But I just think we can't afford anything but a win. And I think Klopp will be drilling that into the players all week, that this is massive for us. I mean, if we were to not pick up the 3 points and Chelsea picked up 3 points, that starts to look like a horrible gap there. And it, you know, I just don't think it can be allowed. And I think no matter what team West Ham come and play with or however they set up, I just think we'll be too much for them to do. And I know I said the same thing last week about Bournemouth, but it's just different this weekend. Anfield's just being a bit of a fortress for us. And I just think that West Ham, they're just not going to have enough to get anywhere near us, I don't think.
Josh, you've been sitting here for us, pulling the manager's sort of press conference today. It's happening around the time that we're just sort of on a slight pre-record on this show today. What are the pull-out moments from it?
He spoke about Karius and how he played against Bournemouth, saying that he only heard criticism. But when Klopp analysed it, he said there was 8 players who could have defended the goal before Lloris got involved. He said even the best keepers in the world make mistakes. De Gea made one recently. There's no perfect recipe for development, which I think is quite interesting because he has had a lot of criticism this week.
The no perfect recipe for development thing's interesting. In general, Karius is interesting, Mike. It's quite clear the managers, whether or not you'd agree with the moment when the manager pulled Mignolet out and brought Karius in. Firstly, he's brought Karius to be his number one. Secondly, he's made Karius his number one. He's not going to change that anytime soon. I think if anyone's expecting that, they're barking up the wrong tree. And also, you wouldn't necessarily want him to, because the last thing you want is to bring another goalkeeper in who's thinking, well, if I make one mistake, two mistakes, I'll be bombed out and it'll all get swapped around again.
Yeah. There's no way. Look, we can all have our opinion, and that's effectively what this is about, you know, his relative strength. But he knows a lot more about football than me, let's be honest, than all of us put together. But
pull the whole house of cards down on us, mate.
If he wants Karius to see through this, to get through it, then I don't think anybody in the world could change Jurgen Klopp's mind. Do you know what I mean? So I don't think a few crap performances or a slow bedding in period is going to be anything. I just don't think he sees the world that way, Jurgen. I think, you know, it's going to take something extraordinary for him to move on this.
I think he's already made the mistake with Karius, and now he's now
bringing him when he did.
Yeah, perhaps we're now living the consequences at this current stage, because I think he brought him in too soon. I think maybe he needed a couple of League Cup games building up that confidence, because he got thrust straight into the limelight, and then that confidence has been sort of sapped now because he's had the criticism that he's had, whereas Mignolet was doing, you know, an all right job at the time. He could have just carried on doing that, and I don't think we'd have been worse off for it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole goalkeeper situation, it's just the fact that it's even a conversation, I think, speaks volumes, because I keep saying that Mignolet's stock was so low that the Karius only had to come in and be all right. Just do the basics, he'd be okay, catch the ball, the normal things that you'd expect a goalie to do. And no one's even having these conversations, but he just hasn't played well from the get-go. I mean, even in his first pre-season game, when he got the ball knocked back to him, was it Wigan away, was it? And he had a roll under his foot and it nearly went in. And you're thinking, bloody hell, lad, you need to just be a bit more, I don't know, careful with what you're doing. But I just think the fact that it's a conversation just says everything you need to know about the form he's had. But there's no way I'd drop him. I just wouldn't. I mean, you bring Mignolet in now, you might as well sell Karius. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, things would have to get really, really bad, wouldn't they? I mean, we're talking throwing the ball in your own net bad, I think, for Klopp to even think about doing that. I mean, looking back retrospectively, you know, it's right to say it was no one gets everything right all the time. And it was a strange decision at the time to bring him in. Because, funnily enough, Mignolet was starting to play better than he had done for a while.
Well, it's mad as well,
actually,
yeah.
He was actually, he's got to realise that, you know, he's not number one, because that was probably the best he'd been for a long time when he got...
It's the first time he's had competition as well.
Yeah, Mignolet. When he got jumped out. But Karius is an interesting one, because he came in from day one with a real sort of casual sort of confidence from day one, and that got my attention to thinking, well, maybe he is, like, you know, something a bit special about him. But he hasn't delivered on that confidence, which is not the best.
Okay, this is the Anfield Rap on Radio City Talk. We'll have more from Jurgen Klopp's press conference and what everyone thinks about the matters going into the weekend's game in a second, but don't go anywhere, we'll be back in a second or two with more of this sort of thing. Mysterious ways by you two there. Back to Jurgen Klopp's press conference. What else did he say that was interesting, Josh?
Said something along the lines of, which is interesting based on what we were touching on before, that the mistakes that we made against Bournemouth were mistakes we made in other games, but teams haven't capitalised on them like Bournemouth did, which is quite interesting, because it does imply that there was a bit of luck on the day for Bournemouth, but also that we've had a bit of luck going our way for a couple of weeks now.
It's interesting in terms of the fact that, again, I always say this, Dan, he sees everything as process, and I think that's the... I think for the way this league is right now, I think it's quite difficult not to see everything as process. I keep saying it. There's five very good sides, possibly four might be slightly better than Spurs. You could be proven wrong in that. But there's five very good sides and only one of them's going to win the league. So you've got to see it as constant process and development, because if you don't, come the end of the season, if you just see it all as being results orientated, well, one of these, sorry, four, only one of these sides is going to get to be happy. I think if you look at all these managers, the way they all talk now, the way Conte talks, the way Klopp talks, you know, the way Guardiola talks, they don't talk about just sort of focused in on literally how many goals win in one end and how many goals win in the other. It's very much about constant development of style of play and what you're about.
Yeah, he likes to let you know, Klopp, that it's definitely not just one game in a season, you know, and it's all about like what we do from now on. You know, he's very, you know, it was just 3 points type of thing. But I'm quite glad that he said what he said, to be honest, because although you know, because like Mike said before, he knows a lot more than we do. It's nice to know that he actually knows that we haven't been playing well, because for him to say that, he can obviously spot what we can all spot watching it, which again, you know that he can. But it's just nice to know that he's looking and thinking, and maybe there might be something in the pipeline where, you know, he might make a few changes, or, you know, he might tweak a few things for the weekend, or, you know, little slight change to a formation or something. But I don't think you can overlook the injuries we've had as well, to be honest, because I was one of the ones who thought that the squad was probably a lot stronger than it is without slating the squad. I thought that we could maybe handle a few missing players, but
I think it's where they're focused in one area. You know, Sturridge this weekend, Coutinho's out, and Firmino's then had a knock last week, and suddenly you're a bit like, oh, hang on, we look one light.
Basically, yeah, because the minute Origi looked like he was flagging a little bit, you were looking thinking, we'll throw Woodburn on, but then you're thinking, well, I mean, listen, I would have thrown Woodburn on personally, but you're talking about throwing a 17-year-old kid into the mix. It's like, whereas in previous weeks, you've looked at the bench and gone, God, there's options coming out.
When we're full strength, we've got a bench.
Exactly.
I don't think we've got a squad, though.
No, I agree, yeah, I agree.
There's two different things. And I think when we're full strength, our bench is great because it's got options as well. But
different types of players.
Yeah, and it, exactly.
And you can make a case for a few of them playing in the first team, and that feels really, really good.
Yeah.
But there is an argument to say it'd be nice. It'd be great to have a lad who's like Mane, but 90% is good.
But ideally, your bench in a Premier League game should have one kid on it, not three. You know, unproven players, and we're going into games with three. And I think it's only in times of adversity that you really realise what you've got, and that's both individually and collectively. So we can see collectively that. If going back to what Neil said about Jürgen sees everything as a process, you know, if he's talking about building a squad from the ground up, that's going to take a long time. And so I think people might need to not necessarily reset expectations about what we can deliver, but think of it more of a longer term, you know, project. I hate that term in football, but a project. So, you know, if he's thinking he's going to bring a lot of 18, 19-year-olds through, that's going to take a long time. Otherwise, you know, we need to go into the market in January, and we seriously need to bolster the squad, because, as we've seen, it's not just forwards, Neil, it's centre-half as well, defence.
Well, I think that cost us last week, because what was a massive, like, last minute?
Well, it was just very, very... It just showed, you know, it was... I mean, there was a couple of things there I thought last week were interesting. Coutinho was a big miss, is right, because I think Coutinho occupies the left, and he occupies the opposition on the left. Without that, they were able to get at our full-backs more, which exposed Milner a lot more.
Yeah.
And then there was obviously a lack of leadership then between the centre-halves and the goalie, which is a bit of a worry if your point of failure is one player in Matip, right? So you're going to need another. So again, you know, these aren't the things where your youth team can come in and take up the slack. It requires experienced professionals as much as anything. And so, you know, it did expose it. And then obviously when it started going against us, against Bournemouth, it exposed individuals as well, if you like.
Yeah.
And you saw that, you know, maybe, you know, it's all very well when things are going great, to pick out every certain players' capabilities. But it's when things are going wrong is when you really find out about them, isn't it?
Yeah, because last week it was horrible, because even like with Milner left back, it's like for the first time, like in you know, previous 10 games, you've looked and thought, like, you can tell he's not a left back there. You know,
yeah. I've sort of noticed in the home games as well, like touching on that Coutinho point, Emre Can seems to be like our widest player, which I didn't think is very good because of how he drives with the ball, the way he plays when he's on the ball. He's not going to be on that wing, and then when Firmino's playing on the left of the forward three, he's going to be doing his interchanging at ears. So it's interesting about that occupying the left, because it feels like down that side without Coutinho, we've just got a load of people who are really interested about cutting.
We need a solution to Coutinho not being the team.
But that solution's sort of Daniel Sturridge, and that's where I felt we missed him, because I thought that you saw the week before, Josh, you saw Mane and Origi swap. Origi feels comfortable to me pulling out into wide areas on the right, when he goes left, it's because he's looking to come in and arc it round with his right foot, yeah. if you know what I mean. That's what he's thinking all the time when he's there.
He can do it, though.
He can do it, but he only goes that channel to then go and do that thing. Whereas Sturridge, you know, for instance, it's Sturridge who puts the ball in for Klein against Southampton. Yeah. You know, he's happier to go on the outside, when he flits that side, he's happier to do that those sorts of bits. In the same way that Firmino's happy to do that when he swaps, when Coutinho's playing and he goes left.
And Sturridge is a left foot, so it's more natural as well to do that.
I think there's onus on Coutinho this weekend, Mike. Origi this weekend. Mm. He gets the goal. He's clearly in goal scoring form. But I don't think I don't want to sound like I'm on his back. He's a young player. He's got, it's the development thing. Yep. But he didn't offer very much in open play.
No, he didn't. He reminded me when he first came in the team, to be honest with you. You know, got a fantastic goal, but his overall game wasn't as good as it is, as good as he can play. But I do think that the problem is systemic in the team, though. I think it's because the midfield's too flat. Without a Coutinho there, you've got Wijnaldum, who played further forward and was actually probably our best player, I thought, on the day, which is encouraging, and because he did step up. But then you've got Henderson and Chan, and it's just that's too static for me. And I think if you're a player like Origi or Infermino or something like that, you need more than that. And Josh is right. Chan ending up on the left as a creative, as a creator, is just not good enough because he's not that player. And so I think Jurgen has got a few things to change. I don't think he can just go like for like, take Coutinho out and put a player in. I don't think we can do that because, again, I don't think the squad is capable of doing it. We need to change something around a little bit there, I think, in order to get that spark back.
We'll talk about that after the break, what we're going to talk about with West Ham in the context of that. But before that, just one other thing from the press conference, Josh, that stuck out.
Sturridge, he said about his injury, he said he has no idea when he'll be back. Until now, he's not been with the team and he's not trained, but he did predict that he should be back for Everton. He said he's definitely missing the next two games, then they're going to hope for Everton. So
they're going to hope for Everton. There is a bit of a gap between Middlesbrough and West Ham, but it is worth pointing out, Dan, you know, with one eye on this, Liverpool have got West Ham at home on the Sunday, but then they do go to Middlesbrough on the Wednesday, and it's the gap there is only 2 days. It's not really a gap where Liverpool are going to be able to work on much training pitch wise. It's going to be recovery, because I'm not expecting a ton of changes between West Ham and Middlesbrough. If everyone was fit, I'd be thinking there could be six or seven, but now I think he may well just almost think, let's just get these two games, maybe one or two changes between the two of them, and get out the other side.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That saying it to me, mate, this morning, exactly that. I think we're just going to have to go all out the next two games. And if at Middlesbrough it gets to 60 minutes and we're literally on our knees, so be it. We're just going to have to try and get the job done as fast as we can, because going back to what we've already spoke about, the squad's just not there at this moment in time, unless you're going to treat it like a League Cup game. I just don't think you can do that, because Middlesbrough, to be fair to them, they look quite strong at home as well. You know, and they don't give much away. And, you know, you can maybe look at it, well, let's just try and go and get 4 points in the next two games. But I don't think you can do that when you're going for the league like we are, especially when Chelsea aren't slowing down for anybody. I think we've got to go all out. And like you say, try and get the job done in the first 45 against Borough, if you get the job done against West Ham, obviously. And go from there, because I just don't think we've got the players to rest all these players.
It's why, quickly, just very quickly, because we need to get into the break, but it's why, Dan, you know, the fact that we were as on top as we were against Southampton and we don't convert it into the result, it's why, for instance, the fact that we are 2-0 and 3-1 up against Bournemouth hurts, is because, listen, we know our record as a team at Borough's not great. We know what it's going to be like on that Wednesday night. It's going to be no battle of laughs. It's not going to be a place you want to play football. They're going to think that they can sense a bit of blood. And all the way through this, when I've been looking at these games, and you look five games ahead, the one I've had my eye on is Borough away looks like no battle of laughs.
Yeah, exactly. I don't take any positives whatsoever when you drop points, to be honest with you. And it might sound a bit childish, like, but you know, we drew away at Southampton and I was furious. Even the fact that, you know, but we played well, you know, on another day we could have won 5-0, but we never. And now it's left us 4 points behind Chelsea with this Middlesbrough game looming, and it just doesn't fill me. You know, it fills you with, like, you know, anxiety, I suppose, that you need to just go and get this one now, because although we were unbeaten in 15 before Bournemouth, well, we were still 4 points behind Chelsea, so it's irrelevant.
Okay, that is the Anfield app on Radio City Talk. More after the break. We're going to be speaking to Andy Middleton about what West Ham have been up to, and I'll be honest with you, it's not good. Welcome back to the Anfield app on Radio City Talk. Earlier this week, I spoke to Andy Middleton about what West Ham have been doing. And as I said to you before the break, it isn't good. It's a dark, dark place at the moment. Around the London Stadium for West Ham United. Here's Andy to tell us about it. Andy Middleton comes to talk to us about West Ham, and last season talking about West Ham was a joy, and this season talking about West Ham isn't a joy. It's no battle of laughs getting done 5-1 at Arsenal, is it?
Well, at home to Arsenal, yeah.
No, at home to Arsenal, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it wasn't. But to be honest, I mean, it was just a follow-on from the second half at Man United, really. It was one of those kind of badly organised, spineless performances. I don't know what else you can say. They just got to hope they can put it behind them. But it's getting a bit more frequent now, getting slightly worrying.
I can see it's getting worrying. I mean, I'll be very frank about it. I couldn't believe that first 20 minutes, how often Arsenal were getting in around the back. I honestly couldn't believe it. And, you know, that no one's doing anything about this. I felt, simultaneously, I thought Arbeloa looked shockingly off the pace, but I also felt a little bit sorry for him in that he was looking around at times like, is anyone going to cover this lad who goes beyond me? Monreal, yeah. I mean, I thought Monreal was poor. And the reason why I thought Monreal was poor was given the amount of time he has from the byline close to the six-yard box, you'd think he could do more with it on about three or four of those occasions. And that was just in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I thought that first half hour, first 40 minutes, they ripped us apart, particularly down that side. And I think, I do think it's, there's kind of, to my mind, two levels to it. You know, there is, Arbeloa did, like you said, he looked shocking off the pace. I think he's allegedly going in January. I don't think he expected to play. I don't know if he's disappointed the club. And he obviously didn't expect to come on at any point. But, you know, so you can understand it at one degree. But on the other hand, you're a professional footballer. You've won the Champions League. You should, you know, So I get torn between the two things, but, you know, whether we were meant to play three and we had to move to four, and whether you've got an experienced right back or an inexperienced one, I just thought at every level that was poor. As you said, we got ripped apart down that side, and experienced professional footballers, you know, you wouldn't do that in a Sunday league. I don't care what you've had to do. It just wasn't on at all. And in a way, I thought we was lucky to be where we were at half time.
Yeah.
So I did, you know, all right, they might have scored three late goals to make it to five, but we deserve to get absolutely tonked.
He seems, like for instance, the goalkeeper situation, and you could see the reaction from, you know, from Winston Reid to Randolph a couple of times as though he just thinks this lad's crap. And he does, and that's worrying. I mean, we spoke about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and I think when we last spoke, I was, you know, broadly speaking, listen, three wins in this league, everything looks a bit different, it'll come together, et cetera, et cetera. And it's watching that at the weekend, it's just every little thing that doesn't look quite right on a football pitch, including subbing your captain, you know, and every little thing just doesn't look quite right. And that must now be the concerning part as much as shipping five.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that's it. And I think against Man United, it didn't, you know. And there's all the rumours now start to come out, and there's stories you hear around the club and things. I don't know if they're true or not. But I think that the most worrying thing is that, you know, against Man United, they were very famously Payet, but there were players who were walking, and just when you see that, just when you see players trotting and walking and not getting back or not looking that interested, to me that starts to ring some alarm bells. So we teams get tonked four or five, that happens, but when you see the attitude of the players, and I think the problem for me is, Noble's not had as good a season, granted, I'll give him that, but him and Reid, particularly Winston Reid, seems to have poor games because Reid plays like he wants to do, like he thinks he's got to do everything.
Yeah.
He's out of position, he's playing a virtual holding midfield player, he's going short with players, he's just all over, because he looks like he doesn't trust anyone else in that back four.
Yeah.
And the keeper, so he's like, if I don't do it, we're in trouble. But the problem is that, because he can't, he's frequently caught out of position, and the whole thing just looks like the players don't trust each other to do the job they're meant to be doing. Perhaps rightly in some cases. So I think there is quite a deep-rooted problem there. It's not just we're having the odd bad game, which is the most concerning thing. Because there are players of quality. But, you know, if the rumours about Payet sulking because he wanted to go to Real Madrid and didn't, and the things that can do in a dressing room, and the players who have been bought in, as I think I've said on calls to you before, but, you know, aren't really good enough, and then you get stories of what some of those players were bought in being paid. And it's those sort of things where you brought in players, he's not as good as me, he's not getting paid. People like Oxford, you know, Burke's injured now, but people like Oxford, and, you know, not getting a start when Arbeloa is. Only little-ish things, some of them, but a lot of little things being wrong like that.
Yeah, it feels as though it mounts up, and this is where, you know, I want to start with the goalkeeper because I think it's interesting. You know, Adrian's very, very poor two or three games ago. He is very, very poor, but he's. I wonder, and I listen, let's be honest about this. Slaven Bilic sees his players, and he knows much more about football than you and I. But I do wonder about this, the bombing out. When you bomb a player out, and he's bombed him out, when you bomb a player out, I always wonder exactly what it does around the rest of the dressing room. Because people are looking at each other going, he's made a show of him there, and he has made a show of him. And that's where, you know, you can understand the idea that other people are looking and going, is he going to make a show of me next?
Yeah.
And then there might be someone in the dressing room thinking, well, I'm glad he's made a show of him. But then when you've got Winston Reid basically all but turning around to Randolph saying, I think you're crap there, mate, for that goal, it just doesn't suggest that it's had the effect he might have hoped it would have if your senior centre-half's turning around and with just utter disdain.
And I think one of the problems is, Bilic has got a management style that we all warm to, and I think people who see him on TV tend to warm to it.
Yeah.
But as we know, sometimes those management styles are either you're the player's friend or you're very honest and very direct, and as you said, if someone isn't doing it, they're dropped. It's the sort of management style fans love. But in today's dressing room, I'm not sure how that always goes down. Perhaps that's a sad indictment of what today's dressing rooms are like. But
they are what they are.
The fact is, if it doesn't work, and I think in a way, I agree with you, but I feel a bit sorry for him, because you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you're saying, well, I've had three bad games, but if you drop me, other people are going to worry about how they're treated and this sort of thing, then you've got the other point where everybody should be guaranteed a place no matter whether they turn up or not.
It's not so much, I don't think it's so much the decision, because the decision could be right or wrong, but it's the fact that it's clearly not gone down well, or that, you know, that Winston Reid's turning around and he basically,
I agree with you.
Yeah,
I think then you start to guess, don't you? And I mean, the problem is when we're playing badly, I can remember talking to you about Liverpool last year, once things aren't going well, these things look, those stories about the little cliques in the dressing rooms or his mates,
exactly,
he doesn't think he's good enough, that's when that all comes out. And when you're winning, that's brushed over. And I think a lot of modern-day dressing rooms, I'm not saying just because we're in a problem, are a bad run away from these cracks being unveiled. And we're unfortunately on a very bad run. And we have a number of those problems of some players thinking they're bigger than the club, some players not liking what other players are earning. And so when it comes down to it, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, moving to the move of stadiums is half an excuse, but I think half of it, you know, I've had it. When you're playing, I don't know, semi-pro or something, and you get to play at a league ground, you feel differently. You feel like you've made it. I think that gone through with some of our players. They're in a nice dressing room. They're in a nice environment. I think they've just dropped off. I think that edge is dropped off, and if you drop that edge off at that level, 1%, 2%, when we're okay, but we're not the best players in the league. You know, I watch City, Chelsea, and you see some of the quality out there, and we just don't have that. So we have to be 100% every week, bang at it like we were last year, and build on that. And when we drop off, they realise they're not that good. This starts to happen, and some of them probably start to think, well, I'm that good, so I can have an easier life elsewhere. And, you know, there's a lot of little fractures there at the moment. As I said, we bought badly in the summer, and that's really coming to bite us now. You know, we needed a right-back desperately. We ended up with Arbeloa. We needed a backup to Creswell at left-back, and we didn't really get one until the last day of the season when we made a desperate buy, and we never bought that centre-forward. So,
yeah.
And you saw us on Saturday with a decent right back and a decent left back and a decent centre forward. Who knows?
Well, I mean,
if that wasn't news, we needed them. You know, we knew that in June.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's it's for me the whole thing at the minute. It's a reminder that, you know, we forget that football clubs have always got to feel like they move forwards, not just for fans, but also for everyone at the club, for the dressing room. And it really looks to me like it's a classic example, and I've seen this happen in Liverpool in summers, you know, going back years, but, you know, I've seen it happen across the park at Everton, and I think it's actually happening across the park at Everton now, that everyone needs to feel as though we've made a step forward. And even if that's not even necessarily true, as long as everyone can believe it, you get somewhere. But as soon as people start to think we've taken a step backwards, then what happens is, or we've not gone forwards, then you're actually taking two steps backwards, three steps backwards.
You're right, and I think that's exactly what's happened to us. Then the move in the stadium's tied into that, in that people were sold a dream. The last season at Upton Park was a dream season. We're moving to a big stadium. There's talks of Champions League. There's a whole, you know, almost a marketing effort around who the club are, where they're going to, where they're moving to, that everyone buys into. And then if you don't add four top quality players, then as you said, you're not moving forward as a club. You can spin it any way you like in the press. But if you're not going out and spending the 30 millions or whatever it is and bringing in players, that the rest of the dressing room go, he's a player. I've got to lift my game a bit if he's playing there. And the fans take to them and that happens, then you're standing still. Exactly it. And if you stand still in this league, well, this is where you end up.
And that, on this then, sort of moving moving forward, looking at beginning to have one look at the weekend. I don't know what team he picks, and I don't get me wrong. I think he'll start Carroll, and he'd be right to start Carroll because Carroll will be, you know, he'll be very Andy Carroll against Liverpool. He'll have a good game. He always does. He's a good player, to be honest with you. I mean, how long his fitness lasts is up in the air, but he's a good player. I think he obviously has to start Payet. I'd be surprised if he didn't. Yeah. But beyond that sort of point, you know, it's difficult for, you know, Antonio scored 6 goals for him this season. You'd expect he'd start. Reed starts. And then from there, it wouldn't surprise me if you see a West Ham team sheet without Mark Noble on it, which I think would be, you know, if the level he showed last season, if he can get back to that level, that'd be unfair. But, you know, he's not been quite at that level this season for whatever reason.
He hasn't. And to be honest, we've looked, you know, at times, Ogbonna has looked a very, very good player playing in that central midfield place. He's got some pace, he can pass the ball. He's done that job well. And I think you're right. If he's fit, I think he'll start Carroll. And although, you know, just without sounding like Sam Allardyce, We've given away more goals than I can count playing out from the back. I'm a fan of teams doing it, but we clearly can't at the moment from lack of movement, lack of confidence, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I would get. I'd just play Carroll and I'd hit as many long balls as you can and I'd play like Sam Allardyce does for a while because something needs to be stable. They need to stop conceding. And if you're in, the one thing, well, not the one thing, but something Carroll definitely brings with you that is that ability to do that. You can hit a ball 50, 60 yards and get players in and around him. And then get back behind the ball. And let's not try this. I mean, 2 of the Arsenal goals, you know, to some of the Man United, are literally, I mean, one of the ones Man United with Payet trying to chip it down the line to 15 yards from your own goal. We can't play like Barcelona at the moment. So let's just and give the respect to where we're going. You know, we're going to a top team, playing really well, and a top club. So let's rein it in a bit. Stop trying to play that football for a little while and get some results and get some confidence back.
And the other thing,
build the cup again.
Yeah, but the other thing that strikes me as well, and it is interesting, most of us at the minute, I mean, I know you had the League Cup game a couple of weeks, last week, sorry, now, but it strikes me as interesting that, you know, suddenly we've all got these games on the horizon. And the thing to point out, I think, from a Liverpool point of view, as much as a West Ham one, is West Ham are coming to Liverpool. You'd expect, if we're all honest, we all expect Liverpool to win the game. I'm sure you do as well. But the two that follow are massive for West Ham, aren't they? It's Burnley at home and West and Hull at home, the next two back-to-back.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where, if you're Bilic, if you're not pulling 6 points, maybe 4, where suddenly there is going to be a ton of pressure. It's, you know, and even on Boxing Day, then looking even ahead, further ahead, at Swansea City away. And there has got to be the building blocks towards being able to look at those three games and get 7. And if that happens, if West Ham get 7 from those three games, then whatever happens against Liverpool, then they're around 20 points come Christmas. And then it begins to be, right, how do we sort this out? But if not, then there's going to be massive pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you look at the games. I think one of the things that worries me about the side is, and they showed the stat, I think, at the weekend, we've dropped more points than any other team from winning positions.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think we dropped 10 points as of Saturday from winning positions. So that says a lot, because if you kept half of those points from a winning position, just half of them,
well, you'd be 12th.
Exactly. So then you're looking at your mid-table. You haven't had a great season, but you're there. But I think that says a bit about whether it's character or whatever it is. You know, and I think there was no doubt that the Tottenham game, 2-1 up in the 89th minute, that was old West Ham. You know, I remember a couple of years ago we were 2-0 up with 10 minutes to go, and I said to a mate of mine, I'll be happy with a draw here. That's the mentality we used to have, and it's sort of back again. So, you know, 2-1 up with 2-3 minutes to go, you lose 3-2.
Yeah.
That, you know, even average sides don't really do that. So, yeah, things have been great. We'd all come out winning that win at Tottenham 2-1. Everyone's on and up, changes things around. There you go. But we didn't. We struggled to get a point, but we got a point at United. Then you get done 4-1 and 5-1. So, we just need a bit of stability. And then however boring or terribly we play, I'll put up with that. Because, as you said, there's games we just need to win some points from now.
Yeah, the other side of this one this week, but what you don't want this week, because it could mean to someone pulling the trigger, it could lead to a big decision, it could lead to just general panic, is you don't want to, I mean, every side that's come to Anfield this season since about the second game, I've been saying they don't want to concede an early goal. If they concede an early goal, they'll come under massive pressure. And I think that's, you know, for West Ham, they need to have a little look at what Sunderland did maybe against us, which is they kept it tight till 75. And then you get out with whatever you get out with. Or look what Bournemouth did, which was, you know, Liverpool were 3-1 up, but it was an intense last 15 where they turned it round. And I do think that's got to be the aim, is keep it as absolutely as tight as possible. But if it's anything like last weekend, then, you know, you'd be right to be concerned.
Oh, God. But that's it. I think we need to go out. Perhaps it has helped us a bit this year not being at home, because we don't play. We don't feel we've got to play.
Yeah.
You know, the Tottenham game where we were 2-1 up, and United when we were 1-0 up for... And, you know, we keep it tight, and that's what they need to do. I'm not a fan of being anti-football, but I'm with you. We should play like Sunderland. We should stick Carroll on and just get a spine that's going to work hard. Give someone like Carroll and just say, just run your legs off, do what you do, upset their centre-backs, and just get something going that hopefully, I can't see in a million years, don't get me wrong, but hopefully we got out of that with a draw, and all of a sudden things look a bit rosy again now. We've gone to a really tough ground, the top side, got a point, and as you said, after that we've got games we should take some confidence in and go after and worry them. But, yeah, it worries me, and our back four worries me, and it really does. And without Coyote and without Cresswell and our better players back there, I can't see us keeping a clean sheet, and I do believe we'll probably concede quite early.
Okay. Prediction then? Anything?
I think it'll probably be 3-0.
3-0?
Hopefully you don't steamroll us, but I think it'll be 3-0.
Okay, Andy says 3-0. Let's find out what everyone else thinks. It's the Anfield Wrap on Radio City, talking Neil Atkinson, Mike Girling, Josh Sexton and Dan Vincent with you until 7:30. We're getting closer and closer to 7:30. Liverpool kick off on Sunday at 4:30, not 4:00. See, this is a public service announcement, and the ability to get yourself another pint pre-match, because I think it will be a nice opportunity for Liverpool to be roared home. It'll be under the lights. It'll feel like an evening game. It'll be cold enough to be an evening game as well, I suspect, against West Ham United. And so, gents, I mean, it's...
They don't like it cold.
Well...
they don't like it, mate.
We'll find out what they like and what they don't like. There's... If Liverpool have got serious pretensions of doing anything beyond sort of messing around for a fourth place finish, and I think they genuinely have, that's the way the manager's talked all season, Dan Vincent, he suggests that this is what this side's about. Liverpool got to get all 3 points against West Ham. I don't think they necessarily have to put a statement performance in. We've mentioned that Middlesbrough game on the horizon. If Liverpool can be far enough ahead to be able to kill the game with half an hour to go and save legs for the game against Wednesday on Middlesbrough, that'll be no bad thing. But it is an opportunity maybe to put the ball in the back of the net, to get settled again. How would you approach the fixture?
I just decide to get the job done as fast as you can, I suppose. I'd decide to get it to 2-0, and then I'd look at making changes, taking the likes of your Firminos off, you know, at 2-0 maybe, and keeping them fresh for Wednesday, because I'm nervous to look too far ahead to Wednesday, because I don't want to overlook West Ham. I mean, you know, as we've
got good players.
Well, they've got good players. They're a good team. You know, look at what they've done last season. You know, I can't imagine it's going to be long before they click. I don't think playing at their new ground helps them, so that might help the fact that they're on the road. And yet they're not a bad side. And if you're a West Ham fan, you might be looking at it thinking, you know what, it's not a bad time to play Liverpool at the moment. You know, you'd rather players with all these injuries on the back of last week. I just hope that we'll be too strong for them. I really do, and I think that we will be too strong for them, and I'd go all out with the best team available, and like I say, get to the hour mark, hopefully be a couple of goals up, and then, you know, bring off the likes of Firmino and maybe, you know, Alalana or something, and rest them for the Wednesday, because I think it's massive. We've got to just keep getting these wins, because although I hope I'm wrong, I can't see anything but a Chelsea victory beforehand, so I think it's going to be massive that we win, because yeah, I'm not interested in fourth.
You agree with that?
Well, I want a reaction, obviously, and I think that's what the whole team and Klopp will have been on about all week in training. I think the Barcelona trip, which we haven't talked about, was quite a timely thing to do as well. You know, to throw something in, which is a bit of a curveball after a defeat like that, to shake things up a bit, so you're just not going to go through the same motions the following week. I think that could either be genius or just barmy, taking them all to Barcelona to watch the match. Do you know what I mean? But what I want to watch from the team, I'm not gonna. It's not a case of when they're gonna score goals or when they can rest players for me or sorry after scoring goals. It's just I want to see vengeance and furious anger from the first minute based on what happened last weekend.
I just want to see more correcting mistakes. So any sort of slip-ups that we made against Bournemouth, I don't want to see any of that sort of thing. I'd like a more solid all-round performance, and maybe that's me asking for a bit more of a boring game in a way. Like I'm not as tempted to want all the excitement that I had last weekend in a bad way. I'd rather just have like a 1-0 or a 2-0 and then go to Middlesbrough after just having that sort of bit more of an easy ride and an easy win. And then maybe if you're having that 1-0, 2-0, you can bring on someone like Lucas for the last half an hour for one of your offensive players, and then you've got them a bit with some sort of rest before Middlesbrough on Wednesday.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I mean, as I say, I just obviously a reaction's going to be great. You know, I hope we get the reaction that we need, and I just want to get the win, though. I'm not going to lie and sugarcoat it any other way. I'd take a scrappy 1-0 win the last minute now just to keep in with the race, because although that might paper over the cracks a little bit, I still just want to be in the mix, you know, to still be there, you know, and get through this difficult festive period, you know, get to January, you know, maybe make a transfer or so, but I just don't want to slip behind. I feel like a gap of like 7, 8, 9 points, it just looks horrible on paper when you're looking at it, and if we all think that looking, then it's not going to be a lot for the players to look and think, oh, do you know what, Chelsea have got to lose the next 3 games now for us to catch them, and I just want us to win and keep the next couple of games are going to be tough, just get the wins under our belts.
Okay, on West Ham then, Andy there's talking about how bad it's been. It strikes me as a classic example of there may well be a sting in the tail for it for Liverpool, Mike, but on the other hand, they were that bad against Arsenal, and they do feel like a football club that's just lost a fair bit of direction. Obviously, you know, one defeat hasn't done that to Liverpool, but this run that West Ham have been on, it shows the importance of football clubs moving forward, I think, and I think that's why, regardless, you know, why we're all upbeat about Liverpool at the moment, is because you really feel as though the football club's moving forwards, whereas West Ham have got themselves into a position, certainly within that dressing room, where they don't feel as though they're progressing as a footy team.
But it's not just the team, is it? It's the club as well. I think there's much more to West Ham than just what's going on the pitch. You know, I think it's not a good time to be a West Ham supporter, because I think they're in for a rough ride, one way or the other, off the pitch, with their ownership, all kinds of stuff for the foreseeable future, as well as on the pitch. So anyway, I think it's they haven't been able to turn around their slump, which is always a bad sign. Now, with Liverpool, the last time we lost, we went 15 games, we didn't, without getting beat, and so we've got to look for that's really what I'm thinking about here. And I think we're learning about what it's like to be a Liverpool supporter under Klopp at the moment, when he gets his team. And so, you know, it will, if we see tomorrow that Liverpool have a massive reaction to getting beat last week, then I think you get a good sense then of understanding about this is what happens when Liverpool get beat, you know, under Klopp. So I'm quietly confident that we're going to see the kind of reaction that we want to see tomorrow.
Okay, then, to begin to sort of pull all this to the close, towards the game, I'm going to get you to pick me a team then, between you, pick me the Liverpool side that you expect it to be, and I think the key question is, I'll just go through and you'll agree or disagree, it will be Karius in goal, it'll be Klein at right back, it'll be Milner at left back, it'll be Matip, and it will be Lovren.
Yes.
Henderson will be in front of them. I think it wouldn't surprise me, I think he'll do this, but it wouldn't surprise me if he does something different, if he goes Henderson, Chan, Lallana, and then in attack he goes Origi, Firmino and Mane for this, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's got one eye on the idea that he'll have Wijnaldum then completely fresh for Wednesday night. Feel as though Liverpool are at home in this one. Wijnaldum then also to come off the bench during the game. That's what I think he'll do, but it wouldn't surprise me if he plays Wijnaldum in the front three, Josh, and moves and does something with Firmino through the middle. What do you think?
I'm not sure about Lallana. I thought he looked really rusty when he came on last week, and I wonder if that's something that's just corrected by him starting this game and then building up that game time, or whether that's something needs to be more done on the training pitch and then maybe bring him back for Middlesbrough. But I wouldn't mind seeing Wijnaldum's part of the front three. I think that'll probably help with him in his search for goals as well. I know he has got one now, but I imagine he'd be wanting more. I'd be happy enough. I'm not sure he provides the width though, Wijnaldum, if he does come into that forward three. That's the one thing that would concern me about that. I'd probably be more happy with it, with the way it was against Bournemouth.
I know what I'd like to do, and I'd like to see the team you played, but I think he'll play Lallana, Mane and Firmino as a front three, and I think he'll play Wijnaldum, Chan and Henderson in the middle.
Okay. Dan, what do you think?
I agree with Mike. I just took the words out of my mouth. I think he'll play that three up front. I think he'll rest Origi and play him away at Borough. That's okay. What I think he'll do.
Predictions for the game, Mike Gaelic.
Liverpool win. Nothing more.
Nothing more, nothing less. Josh?
2-0 Liverpool.
Okay.
I'm going to go 3-1.
3-1 to the Reds. Okay, Liverpool have to get back moving forward against West Ham United. It's worth remembering West Ham beat us 3 times last season in 4 games, the other one being a draw, the game that led to the replay in the Cup, which hurt. They all hurt, to be honest with you. If there was fixtures I was looking out for this season in my mad world, obviously there's Everton, obviously there's United, but I had one eye on both Sunderland and West Ham. Well, Liverpool have beaten Sunderland at home last time out. Let's make sure they do the same thing to West Ham. Let's make the Happers very, very, very unhappy. That's the Anfield wrap.
Sports Social Podcast Network.